you are writing about a hearing that I watched a couple of weeks ago. I watched the Senate version of the Armed Services Committee's hearings, where we had General Dempsey, we had Admiral Greenert, and we had the vice chairs of the Army, Navy, and Marines testifying about the situation in which they believe they find themselves. And there was one statement in particular, you wrote about it, and it kind of clubbed me over the head when I heard about it. General Corelli, Vice Chief of the Army, said, "We'd have to look very, very hard at our strategy, at what we can and cannot do," when he's talking about the potential budget cuts that the Pentagon might be facing. My thought at first was, every agency is going to have to do that, and isn't that kind of the whole point when you don't have as much money as you used to have?
Yeah, I kind of thought that was an open door that everybody should walk through, not a warning. My sense was that the vice chiefs of the services and the candidate for the chairmanship, General Dempsey, were all saying as a warning, look out, we're going to have to revisit strategy. Well, I think that they should welcome that, and I think the public should welcome that, and the Congress should welcome that. This is, in fact, when you reach the point where your federal fisc is in trouble and you're ending two wars and defense is clearly on the table and everything else, it's perfectly appropriate to revisit strategy and say how we want to use the forces. Are we doing the right thing? Do we have the right structure of forces? We've got fiscal constraints. How do we do the things that are important and do it with less? So, you know, in a way, I congratulate them and pat them on the back for raising the right question. I just felt like it was a warning rather than a good question. It's just a darn good question.
Well, I feel comforted because I heard it the same way that you heard it. How are we in a different situation today than we were when you were in OMB and looking at drawing down after the Cold War and trying to make those strategic decisions about what we can do, what we need to do, and what maybe we don't have to do anymore?
Well, you know, it's interesting you should raise that. We've actually done this four times since the Korean War. We did it in the 50s with Eisenhower. We did it in the 70s with Nixon. We did it with George Herbert Walker Bush and then Bill Clinton after the end of the Cold War. And interestingly, each of those three times, the last three times, the same question got raised. It wasn't always hooked to what you did with the budget, but it was the right question. Eisenhower said, look, we've got a confrontation with the Soviet Union. I think we don't need to have a large standing army to have that confrontation. We'll never have as many people as they do, so what we want to have is an adequate nuclear retaliatory force. So he went to massive retaliation as a strategy, and he cut the defense budget. Nixon said, I don't want to maintain this big force that we had in Vietnam with all these land forces, so let's muster them out. Let's go to a professional army. It's going to be smaller. What do we have to worry about? Well, mostly we're going to do detente with the Soviet Union, and we're going to find surrogate countries like Iran and so on, not a great strategy, but it was his strategy, that are going to make it possible for us to ensure security in other regions without having a big U.S. military presence or force. End of the Cold War, same deal. George Herbert Walker Bush said, and Colin Powell and the Secretary of Defense, Dick Cheney, all said, okay, what's our relationship to the rest of the world? How do we hedge? Let's not look at the Soviets anymore. Maybe we just have to worry about a couple of major regional contingencies. This was Colin Powell's formula. So we can build down the force. And indeed, Powell likes to brag that he took 500,000 people out of the active duty force in the 4 years of the George Herbert Walker Bush administration. And he cut the defense budget 25%. So now we're at a perfectly comparable moment where wars are ending, where the federal fisc is in trouble, where, by and large, we don't face any existential threats. It's a troubling world, but it's actually, in many respects, more peaceful than it used to be. We can take a good hard look at what we have the forces to do, what we use them for, and what the priorities are. So, you know, it's the moment to make that kind of analysis.
A lot of folks that are looking at the defense budget, including a lot of folks in Congress, are focused primarily on sheet metal, on weapon systems and so on. Is that the right place to be looking when you're trying to figure out what to do next?
No, I think absolutely not. Now, some people argue, well, we've worn down the force, we've got all this equipment that we've got to now refurbish and reset and rebuild and buy new stuff, and we took a procurement holiday in the 90s, and this is just a terribly different situation from the 90s. You know, actually, the Army was very smart. The Army budgeted in the supplementals over the past 5 years so that they would get $100 billion to refurbish and reset and rebuy Army equipment, and they did. And they got money in there as well to buy all these MRAPs, which we now have thousands of MRAPs running around, and now spending $200,000 per MRAP to up-armor them so they can be protected against IEDs. In other words, the Army wasn't completely stupid. They figured while there was good money to be got, they'd do a lot of their reset now. So, in fact, the reset bill is nowhere near as high as some people said it would be. I was struck in the vice chief's testimony that the reset numbers they put on the table were really fairly low, and that's because they've already done a lot of the reset. So hardware metal bending, I think, is not the problem here. The real question is, what do we want the forces to do, and how many do we need, and then what do we do to bring down the size of the force structure? And the other big question, which is a really tough one that, Gates tried to grapple with, but I think thinly, and that is, what about the back office? What about defense overhead, where we're spending 42% of the budget on the overhead, on the back office, not on the point of the spear? How do we get that under control? And I think the guidance there is the same guidance one gives a teenager. You get more disciplined by cutting their budget. So you cut the overhead budget, and you'll get a more organized and efficient overhead.
When you talk about Secretary Gates going about that thinly, are you referring to the time that he had to do it, or the amount of gusto that he put into doing it, or maybe some combination or something else?
I think it's the way he went about it. Basically, he was saying to the services, I'll give you $100 billion back to keep if you can find $100 billion in efficiencies. And I have to tell you, I've never known an organization that voluntarily said, I'm going to become more efficient. It usually happened because it was some external market discipline. When Chrysler faced market discipline, they had to become more efficient. And it's really the same with any bureaucracy. Trimming the resources, cutting it back, saying you have to manage better is the first step to greater efficiency. Gates basically said, find efficiency and you get to keep the money. I didn't think it was a very stringent form of discipline.